Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
That ball's hit high. It's hit deep. Score 4 for Victor. A grand slam, and the Astros lead this game 6-1.
Woo-hoo. This thin air. Got to get those martinis dry.
Runner goes, tried to check his swing. That's a swing. Ball game over. Astros win 6-5. Haters a perfect 24 for 24 and saves to start the year. And the Astros win another one-run game. They're now a Major League best 18-7. That one got a little close, Plummer, but they hold on for another win to start the month of July.
Good morning, everybody. Todd Kalas, Jeff Blum on another Astro win call. Space City Home Network. From last night, Todd Kalas, Seth, mentioned it got a little close. Hader gave up a dinger in the ninth inning.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, another job well done. He got his 24th consecutive save to start the season. Those games in Colorado, I know what people are expecting, and I know darn well, and you do too, what people are fearing the most, especially since they continue another series without two of their better players.
Right, and if you, I mean, the offense, great, you score 6 runs. The Astros, if they can just be bothered to score 4 runs or more, they have an incredible record when scoring 4 runs or more.
Yeah,
So you do it in that thin air. It's annoying me that Hunter Goodman has come back to the Rockies to give them some kind of a shot in the arm, because that was really the biggest damage done last night was by Hunter Goodman.
Yeah.
But this configuration of the Astros without, obviously, Yordan and without Peña for whoever knows how long it goes. Seeing Paredes at leadoff and just being able to soak up pitches is cool and interesting. I don't necessarily like seeing him be the guy that people have to push around the base paths when the speedier guys get on, but it is what it is. Everything about the Astros is what it is, and they're the second best team in the AL right now.
They are the second best team in the American League, and it feels like, you know, I think I told you this earlier in the week, in that, all right, we've got to make the transition here. Yeah, we can't continue to have the conversation like, boy, can you believe what they're doing without this guy,
right,
this guy, this guy, and this guy? At some point in time, you have to realize, you know what, some of these guys, they belong. Some of these guys are here for a reason. You forget that you have one of the better talent evaluators as a part of your team in Dana Brown, though he might actually be horrible at evaluating like injury situations, and giving us way too much optimism within the first 24 hours of talking about somebody's injury. But that's neither here nor there. We'll get to that mess in a little bit. It's just some of these guys are really good, and they absolutely belong. Now let's transition, because it feels very much like, even with you having to roll forward with guys like Colton Gordon, who maybe make you feel a little uncomfortable, especially when he pitches in Colorado, or whoever they're trotting out in their lineup and batting fifth or seventh or second, whatever it is, they might end up being the best team record-wise in all of Major League Baseball in the next month or so.
I mean, I guess, okay, some of these guys belong. Yeah, but offensively, they're still a bad team offensively. And where I guess guys do belong is defensively, because we're one of the best fielding, the second best fielding team in baseball.
Yep.
And you have to combine that with the bullpen. You know, like, yeah, Hader makes it a little bit hairy in the ninth inning there, but they had 4 relievers come out to finish that job last night. Colton Gordon, we talked about the over-under for Colton Gordon. Like, the expectations have kind of been set going into that game as, man, if he can give you 5 innings and allow 2 or 3 runs, that's about the benchmark right now for him.
Yeah.
And he had a rougher night last night. Him waiting for a ball to go foul that was, like, just on a straight – it was running parallel to the foul line, and Colton Gordon just kept – waiting to see if some twist of fate was going to veer it off course. So he allows a hit with that. They didn't end up scoring any more runs after that one. But that was a moment for me last night where you remember, oh yeah, the Astros are 24-9 in games in which Hunter and Framber start. they are now 27 and 25 when anybody else starts for them. So this team right now is still very much it's a lot of doing things fundamentally sound, but then mostly Hunter and Framber.
Yeah.
If you lose those, all is lost.
I saw that stat, the one that you just reeled off about their record whenever who pitches. And you understood that with Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez. They've been excellent. And we just talked about it, I think, Monday after Framber's performance on Sunday at Daikin Park. It's now 10 consecutive starts in which he has made, and the Astros have won. I think he's got 8 of those decisions. Okay, it's not exactly Tarik Skubal, where he's gotten all 10 decisions and is 10-0 those last 10 games for his ball club. But hell, Colton Gordon, Seth, going into yesterday's game, he did not get the decision, but the Astros have now won 7 of his 9 starts. That's pretty good. So it is a little, it makes that other stat, the 27-25, their record without Hunter, without Framber, Colton Gordon's been pretty dang good. Last night, not necessarily withstanding, he struggled a bit. But again, the Astros offense, good enough. Thank you, Victor Caratini, for the 4-run bomb.
He's been, I don't know, I guess my standards are higher. Yeah, those guys have been, like, they've been just fine for what you should expect from them. But there isn't anybody that's emerged yet where you feel like, okay, this is the next potential Spencer Arrighetti, or this is the next Hunter. You know, Hunter Brown's a different case just because he's high draft pick. But that's, I guess, that part of just kind of sitting back and respecting what they've done, but then also wondering, okay, what does this look like when you get into the playoffs, and how are you going to have to win 4 games in a series? Obviously, it's a lot easier with Peña and Yordan out there. It would be an all-time story if this team, as currently composed, ends up making a deep push in the playoffs, because it's so far above expectations. The Yordan, for those of you who didn't catch the update, Yordan, a couple days ago, Dana Brown said, hey, yep, looks like Yordan's on track. Yesterday, we get word that there's been a setback, and Yordan is not going to be swinging a bat for the foreseeable future.
No,
so
he
that's
not.
I apologize if we didn't, if this is what you're waking up to.
Yeah, I'd rather talk about the good thing first, at least in the first few minutes, than the other thing, which we have, unfortunately, plenty of time to spend time on, and we will with the Yordan setback. It's like, hey, here we go again. I blame all of the cynicism from a lot of our listeners, and maybe you, Seth, because you brought this up earlier this week with the injury situation and how the Astros have handled it. I know.
Cynicism.
It exists.
Cynicism.
Well, yes, there's a little cynicism. Like Rob Torres yesterday on YouTube.
Cynical about just laying out the actual history of the Astros and broken bones.
Well, no.
I don't know. Is cynicism not like, oh, okay, everything's awesome all the time? I'm not so sure about that. Oh, you're a cynic. You're a cynic to not think that everything's awesome,
no,
not awesome all the time.
It's Jeremy Pena's, fractured rib turning into, okay, he's going to need, a catheter, or he's going to have a breathing tube, inserted this week. Uh-huh. It's going to be 2 weeks. And now it's Yordan, with the hand situation. There's just so many wild things that people are saying, like from the early onset, like as soon as you hear Dana Brown say, he's hitting balls all over the yard, it's looking really good, and maybe it'll be a few days, maybe we can bring it back before the All-Star break, and then boom, setback. Like, I'm literally watching Yordan just destroy baseballs at Daikin the other day before the game, and then this, the setback. Like, what is going on? Carpal tunnel? Like, does he too have like another fracture that's developed? Like, this, now there's going to have to be more imaging. All this stuff is going to, just kind of push things.
Imaging that they do on like reclaimed Soviet X-ray machines from the 1970s.
It feels
I'm convinced that when you walk into the Astros medical imaging facility, it's all of that. Machines and computers have to have that like that metallic green cover to them. It's all that. It's all that drab green BS. They got a mainframe computer with tapes reeling on it in the corner. They don't know what they're doing.
I've been lucky. Like, I haven't had to have a lot of X-rays in my life, right? I've broken my hand a couple of times. But I used to go when I coached in Galena Park. the North Shore team chiropractor, you know, had a shop just down the road there. And it was like he stopped caring about, you know, keeping up with the Joneses like in 1985. So a lot of the equipment and, you know, just the overall decor is like just stopped then. And the necessary equipment, like even the x-rays, you remember like those big blocks, like they would stick in like the x-ray machine and you'd have to put your hand or your elbow, your arm, whatever on top of them. And they'd bring this gigantic thing down to take a picture of the image mm-hmm. of your arm. And it was going to take 24 hours for the picture to come through. That's kind of how I feel like the Astros are operating from a medical standpoint at this time. Like they
yeah,
are not.
I don't know if they're even. I think they're just guessing at stuff. It's like their inability to diagnose that a bone is broken. I'm not giving them any more excuses anymore. Yeah. They got a clean house. They roll out that hand doctor to be honored the day after we found out that Yordan had an undiagnosed broken hand. Yeah. They're just, I don't know what's going on or what kind of sponsorship arrangement or agreement they have with whichever medical office they use, but they gotta put an end to it, man. You're hurting people.
They do.
I feel like this is some Netflix series where you're gonna find out later that there's been an evil nurse over there going around breaking people's hands while they're under anesthesia.
Don't put that on them because
it's happened.
It might happen before.
It'll happen again.
It's gonna be HBO Max docuseries, like a 5-parter, like all of the crap Houston's had to go through with their baseball team and their injury updates. It's gonna be terrible. All right, I'm Sean Bajani, by the way, in for Sean Pendergast. Seth Payne here. This is kind of like our Friday jacked up schedule this week, holiday weekend, July 4th. Hope you enjoy it as much as you can and get some time off. Coming up next, we'll dive a little bit deeper into the ball game last night, the Yordan stuff, let you hear from Dana Brown, and do all of those things next at Sports Radio 610.
They're very aware of that, and very lucky to have guys that understand the situation that we are in and always find ways to get runs across the board. It takes a team who's, you know, we are committed to this, and that's why we always got someone who's willing to, you know, take a step forward and get big hits for us.
Joe Espada talking about guys picking up the slack without Jeremy Peña on the field these days, along with Yordan Alvarez. The Astros have gotten contributions at all points along the way over the last couple of months, especially since they are the best team in Major League Baseball, Seth, since May 1st, and a Major League best 19-7 in the month of June. And they've started the month of July off now a perfect 1-0 after last night's 6-5 win over the Colorado Rockies, picking up their 51st victory on the season. By the way, shout out to the Mariners for helping the Astros out again last night and sucking. They lost. So now Houston is a season high 7 games on top of the Mariners, Seth, in the American League West.
So I'm intrigued by what you teased. The only thing that can sideline the Astros, but hasn't yet, but still affects the bottom line.
Yeah.
What's that mean?
The bottom line for me is legitimately contending for a World Series. The only thing that can sideline the Astros is what we've been unfortunately talking about outside of them stacking up dubs, the injuries. That's the only thing that can sideline them. Because I kind of tried to make the point, or started to anyway, last segment, like, hey, Colton Gordon and Ryan Gusto and who's the other pitcher that I'm blanking
Brandon
on right
Walter.
Now? Brandon Walter. Yeah. My gosh, yeah. He'll be pitching later on this series. You got Hunter Brown today and Walter, the final of the 3-game set. Injuries is the only thing that can do it, because at some point in time you have to realize that, hey, this is not just a short 2-3-game sample size from these guys. They've been able to, you know, play the game of chess over checkers from a pitching standpoint, being thrown into the fire, whether it be you're making a start for Arrigetti or making a start for Blanco. Cam Smith is not performing like the rookie was, you know, the first month of the season. Like, he's been one of the better hitters in the American League now for the last month, hitting at a .353 clip and doing so with power. You know, it just kind of goes on and on down the list. And is it going to catch up to them in the postseason, kind of like it did last year, when, hey, you knew you had the pitching and you felt pretty comfortable with that, but man, you needed the offense, and it just wasn't there against the Tigers.
You didn't have the offense, and then also, if you get into a 7-game series versus a really good team, the climb is really, really steep for guys like Colton Gordon. If a team's going to see him twice in a 7-game series, or if he's going to see Brandon Walter or any of those other guys twice, that's where it's not an oversimplification. It's injuries. If you have Pena, if you have Arrighetti back, if you've got either Blanco or Javier or one of those guys, and God
Garcia,
please,
yeah,
Yordan, if you have Yordan back, like those aren't particularly huge ifs, or at least it shouldn't be. It's not like you're hoping for some guy to come back from an Achilles tendon tear in 5 months or something.
Yeah.
You're not asking for the miraculous. You're asking for what should be relatively simple injuries and recoveries, like Arrighetti's broken hand, like Jeremy Pena's broken, like Yordan's broken hand, all these things. This team that you've ridden defense, the bullpen, and like Paredes is competitive at the competitiveness at the plate.
Yeah.
All these things that are just kind of not as exciting, but just good, sound, fundamentally good baseball.
Yeah,
yeah. You pour gasoline on the fire. That's the stressful part, but also the exciting upside of it.
I mean, I don't want to directly compare, you know, Isak Paredes, who's a very good baseball player and considerably younger than that of Alex Bregman, who we were heralding as an Astros icon and wanting very much for him to be back for the long term this past offseason. But you're going from a guy who had one of the best eyes in Major League Baseball as a hitter in Alex Bregman to another guy who is just about as sound at the plate in Isak Paredes. He's a lot more aggressive at the plate and fights pitches off until he gets the one that he likes, and he might not be a guy that sprays it all over the field, but when the guy connects, the guy connects. And
yeah,
Watching him battle, it is fun. It is fun. Yeah, I don't know if you have to be necessarily like a baseball nerd to enjoy that. It was just really cool. What did we talk about? 31 pitches he made Jameson Taillon throw on Sunday night. I don't know how many pitches he induced from Rocky pitchers last night, but he gives you competitive at bats almost every darn time up. And that is one of them. That's if you have that ability to kind of, elongate innings, especially as a table setter, then that's something that's very different from an Astros lineup from last season when they were not very selective. And this goes in direct correlation to what Joe Espada, Dana Brown talked about in the offseason with Alex Cintron and Troy Snitker, their hitting coaches, needing to, you know, get their guys to not be so aggressive early on and fail, really, in at-bats. But, you know, find your pitch and go with it and put together more competitive at-bats. It took a little bit this season to kind of see that come to fruition, but I feel like they're doing it.
Yeah, so the big ifs, like, the guys that you feel it's realistic that we should have these guys back. Yordan has probably plummeted for me. Like, I feel
definitely
more optimistic, obviously. Pena, I feel optimistic about. I remember that Carlos Correa missed 50 games with broken ribs back after his massage therapist incident. But more likely than not, that Pena is going to be okay, and it should hopefully be no big deal. So Pena's right up there at the top of guys I'm optimistic about.
Yeah.
And like Arrighetti, I'm still relatively optimistic about, and they're just taking their time with him. Yordan's just, he's right down there at rock bottom because of the entire season. The fact that he was struggling before they really started looking at the hand seriously. And so if that was because of the hand, we're looking at the entire first half of the season where Yordan has been affected either in performance or just non-availability because of that hand. And now
yeah,
we've got yet another setback.
Well, all right, so you bring this up. I saw Larry and Stafford on Twitter last night, and he was talking about the Yordan injury. And I'll read the tweet for you because with you saying that, I wonder. And here's the question. Will Yordan's injury, as I've said, the only thing that can really sideline the Astros is injuries. And will Yordan's injury sideline the Astros ultimately or keep them from realizing their true potential this season, similarly to Deshaun Watson's injury years ago with the Texans. Here's what Larry and Stafford said. Yordan's injury is the equivalent to Deshaun getting hurt in Seattle in the Seattle game in 2017, and then came home, practiced, and then he was out for the rest of the season. That year, the Rockets, Astros, and Texans were on the cusp of doing exactly what they're doing now. That was the tweet. And
yeah,
that's that point in time where I thought, hey, City of Houston's entering into the golden age of sports, and it's looking great. Astros win the World Series. Deshaun Watson tears his ACL, and it all went to hell.
Yeah, I guess that was the difference, is that the Astros had already won the World Series at that point. So that was already in the bag. So by at least by the time we learned that Deshaun had a torn ACL, whether it happened in the game or not, whatever. But this might actually even be worse if Yordan is out the entire year, because that Astros team was showing a lot of, or excuse me, the Texans with Deshaun Watson at that point were 3-7. Deshaun had gone 3-3, but it was really, really promising and it was exciting. I don't know exactly what the ceiling would have been. And if I'm being honest, like, okay, how optimistic was I that the team was actually going to make the playoffs that year or anything like that? I think I was more just excited about Deshaun Watson.
The future.
This time it feels like you're building with the Texans the right way. You're building with the Rockets the right way. Mm-hmm. The Astros are actually out there doing it in the middle of the season without Yordan. As we are now, that's where it feels different. We don't know that Yordan's going to be out for the whole year. So, we don't know that at all.
Right.
More likely than not, he's going to come back at some point. So there's still hope, I guess. With Deshaun Watson, the ACL is torn, and that's it. You know that they're done for that season.
But, you know, Yordan, it's a broken hand. It is a bone that is broken. Why can't we just allow these guys to heal broken bones? I don't need him swinging bats. I don't need him doing baseball activities. I don't need him to do anything. Jeremy Pena the same way. The way that Dana Brown spoke about Jeremy Pena 48 hours ago when he had said, well, you know, he's on the trip with us, you know, and that's so he can do some baseball activities. And if he's feeling good, it's a feel thing. We can have him start doing some stuff and maybe he'll be back, July 8th is when he's eligible to come off the IL. It's a broken rib. Wait until it is not broken anymore. It is a broken hand. Wait until it is not broken anymore.
There's a problem with Yordan. They didn't know it was a broken hand. That was the
until they did, and then he's freaking hitting dingers at Daikin Park pregame this weekend, and it's like, what did it take a week for this like fracture that you all of a sudden like discover to heal? Like, what the hell are we doing? He's been out for 2 months with this situation, and it's like, we're going to acknowledge this, and then to give the fan base even more hope, go swing some bats, Yordan. Go run around the bases at, like, half speed. Get people excited for the setback announcement that's coming in 5 more days. Like, it drives me crazy.
I guess the tricky thing with hands is that they're just so complicated, and everything affects everything else. So I would hope that with Yordan, what this is like what you said, you advocate rest. The problem with that, like complete and total rest, is that it makes the overall rehab a lot longer a lot of times, because then you have to, everything is atrophied all over the place. So with him, this hopefully is just something that's more muscular, that the bone is healed, but his hands are still learning how to swing a bat with the force that he does, and that it's just a little bit of an actual minor setback.
Yeah.
But as you have accused me and the Astros fan base of being cynical about this, we know better because we've seen it before that a setback is not just a setback. Sometimes setbacks turn into, oh, yeah, it turns out that guy's been dead for 18 months. Sorry, we forgot to tell you. That's what's going to happen 12 months from now. So can we get an update on Yordan? Oh, he's been feeling great. And then you find out later that he actually died 2 weeks earlier.
Yes.
That's the Astros injury update.
Buried him at sea a couple of weeks back. It was a peaceful ceremony. A texter from the 832. Is it more important that Yordan comes back or that Pena / starting pitchers return? I think it's an interesting question. It kind of pokes a hole directly in the premise that I just laid out this segment, in that the only thing that can sideline the Astros is injury. Well, if you get mostly healthy but are without Yordan, who hit at least 31 homers, within the last, in the last 4 years consecutively, you don't have that bat in your lineup come playoff time. That is exactly my point. Like, this might be good enough to do what you're doing in baseball's worst division during the regular season, but come playoff time, when you need to finally be able to tap into that true potential of an explosive offense that you thought on paper you were going to have this offseason, you don't have that guy, then you're asking more from Jeremy Peña in a career year. You're asking more from Cam Smith in a rookie season. You know,
and that's the fix, though, that you're in, though, too, is what's the other big known thing about winning in the playoffs? Really, really hard to do it without good pitching. It really, man, more times than not, it just comes down to how good are your pitchers.
Well, yeah.
And right this moment, I feel good about two of the starting pitchers. The other guys, I'm just holding my breath and seeing what comes of it, and then really leaning on the bullpen. So that's the part I can envision. It's easier for me to envision the Astros winning a World Series without Yordan than it is for me to envision them winning a World Series with this current group of starting pitchers.
Hey, look, the Tigers, they didn't win the World Series last year, did they? No, of course not. But correct me if I'm wrong, did they or did they not beat the Astros by doing this whole opener crap? And they didn't really have, like, you know, three dudes that they were going to go game one, game two, game three, shut your ass down. No, they didn't have that at all. They were very creative in how they had to attack the opposition. Not to say that the Astros couldn't do the same thing. And they've got two aces on the staff, as it appears right now, in Fromber and Hunter. So maybe it's a little overblown, in my opinion, that, hey, the Astros, they're really going to have to go out and try to find this year's Yusei Kikuchi. I'd like them to, especially if it didn't cost them a Jacob Melton or a Bryce Matthews or, you know, one of their top prospects that very much should maybe be playing Major League Baseball with the club right now. But I think it does exist, the possibility that you could get by from a pitching standpoint with what you have.
Yeah.
But you still have a whole nother half season to kind of see what's necessary from Colton Gordon and less Ryan Gusto, but maybe Brandon Walter and however they piece things together. Because Eric Eddy will come back, you know. God forbid, like, hey, he's got a broken bone, and I'm not watching him throw 90 pitches off of a mound in a live BP session or anything. No, like, it seems very much like he's doing the things necessary that maybe Yordan should be doing, which is, you know, doing more rest than actual baseball activity every day.
Yeah, that and the Astros' ability to kind of platoon guys and piggyback start and everything else in the playoffs, we've seen that for years and years and years. That's where I'm trying to remember and remind myself that, all right, I didn't feel about Charlie Morton in mid-2017 the same way I would eventually about him. Like, the trust factor, we've seen time and time again with various pitchers. It grows, and there's still time for any of those.
Yeah.
We didn't feel great about Hunter Brown or Spencer Arrow. But we didn't feel great about Hunter Brown early on in 2024 at all. Spencer Arrighetti was more of a slow burn-in, too. So I am very much open to that. I'm not saying it's impossible.
Half.
It's just this current composition, the way they've been pitching. There's some good things with these young guys, but at some point, I would love to have the luxury of having a third starter that I feel might someday go seven innings into a game.
Yeah. Texter sent in, you know, Yordan was sucking before he got injured. Well, he might have been injured, you know.
Right. And, yeah.
He might have been injured.
Yeah, we laid all that out.
That.
Yeah, you're just reciting what we already said, man. We don't know. What we're hoping is that it was because of his hand that he was. We're genuinely, like, retroactively hoping that he was injured that whole time.
Yeah.
Because that makes more sense than him being on the most prolonged slump he's ever had.
Between Yordan and Dana Brown, they've at least acknowledged that that was the case for some of the time. You know, Yordan trying to play through injury, and it obviously wasn't working. Seth Payne, Sean Bajani, that's me in for Sean Pendergast. If you'd like to weigh in, 713-572-4610. We'll definitely get to your texts and chats in the YouTube and Twitch. Coming up next, headlines. We'll get you the day's top stories and set for the rest of the week. Stay there at Sports Radio 610.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, good morning, everybody. Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast. Seth Payne here. Time for headlines. We talked a lot of Astros to start the show this morning, and Get you caught up on a couple of more things. Astros now a season high 17 games above 500, Seth, and have a 7-game lead on the Seattle Mariners after last night's 6-5 victory in Colorado's game one of a 3-game series. Coming up, you got Hunter Brown against Austin Gomber tonight, and then Brandon Walter against Kyle Freeland tomorrow. That's a day game tomorrow, 2:10 start for the Astros.
And then they, this is a classic potential, sleeping on your opponent series versus the Rockies, where you've gone 11 straight series with either a tie or a win in those series. Last night got hairier than I would have liked. And you got to acknowledge that, okay, Colton Gordon's going to have nights like that. The relievers did great. Josh Hader made it a little bit hairy. But at the very least, you go versus a really bad baseball team in that altitude and you score 6 runs, which is a lot for the Astros.
Yeah. You get through tonight on a Hunter Brown day. Happy Hunter Brown day, everybody. If you get through tonight, you win the series. And you'll take 2-1 against the Rockies, even though they've only won 19 games all season long. And you just accomplished that feat within a... less than really a calendar month if you were the Astros. So just win tonight, win the series, secure that, and then whatever happens in a wild and wacky maybe day game in Colorado with Brandon Walter on the mound, you'll accept it and move on.
That was Victor Caratini's grand slam last night needs to be acknowledged, and they try to lift themselves up out of second to last in hitting with bases loaded. That feels like one of those flukish things that's got to change at some point.
Yeah.
So I'm expecting and anticipating a slew of grand slams in the second half of the season.
What did a couple of years ago where the Astros went all season long without hitting a grand slam, and they were like the only team in baseball without a grand slam in the season? It was something. There was something weird. 2 or 3 years ago, it was like that. But that's an element of clutch hitting, and we know the Astros have been very clutch this season. They've scored almost 50% of their runs with 2 outs this season. And the runners in scoring position, Victor Caratini is exquisite at that. And he's been Mr. Clutch. He came through last night with a big home run that ended up standing up. They needed every bit of that grand slam, by the way. Shout out to Cam Smith. If we're going to acknowledge people real quick, acknowledge Cam Smith. Another web gem. In right field last night, made a hell of a catch against the wall. And even at the plate, I know he struck out 3 times, but another multi-hit game for him. I looked at this over the last 19 games. Now he's hitting about .360 with an OPS above 1,000. And he's got 4 of his last 6 games have also been multi-hit. 8 during that stretch. Now that's very impressive stuff from Cam Smith.
Yeah, that play in right field it felt like a young George Springer. It was just enough of a reckless disregard for his own safety and health. He went straight into the chain link fence, and he wasn't exactly quite sure where it was, and he made the play. Jake Meyers also with almost a catch in the outfield that he had trapped it against the fence. Altuve. I always try to, reward the behavior you want. Smart decisions out there on the bases or defensively was wise enough to touch second, even though the base runner had gone back to tag up at first because he thought it was an out.
Hey, so every once in a while.
Got a force out at second after a review. Yeah.
Every once in a while, Jose will make you proud defensively, right? Every once in a while. Of course,
he'll make you proud defensively. It's just anything that involves anything that's a little askew, whether it's as a base runner or as a fielder, you're never quite sure if he's aware of what's going on.
Yeah, we'll have more on this a little bit later on in awaiting updates. The Yordan Alvarez and his setback is announced by Dana Brown and the Astros yesterday, shut down until he'll be evaluated by a hand specialist. And if the Astros don't have the best, the second best, the third best, and maybe the fourth best in the damn country, looking at Yordan Alvarez's hand, then they're doing it wrong. I will just say that. We have a lot of NBA news, Seth, and one that I did not see until this morning. But SGA, the league's MVP for the Oklahoma City Thunder, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, signed a Supermax deal. This is just wild to me. It doesn't seem real. 4 years, $285 million. That is a $71.25 average annual value. Dude's going to make $364 million over the next 6 years in salary and damn near $80 million in the 2030-2031 season.
Yeah. It's career advice I always give to kids is if you can be the MVP of the National Basketball Association, that's a pretty proven path to making a lot of money.
Yeah. Duly noted.
Yeah. A lot of kids don't realize that. Yeah. Focus on your athletics, kids.
Yeah.
that degree's only going to hold you down. I'm joking, kids. So you're never going to do nothing in sports. Focus on your books.
Yeah. Focus on the analytical and the math part. Maybe you can be a sports agent or something like that, or a general manager and make some good money too. What do you think of this Giannis Antetokounmpo drama now in Milwaukee? Not happy is the report about Giannis not being happy that the Bucks waived Damian Lillard, and they did so yesterday because, look, he wasn't going to play basketball this upcoming season. He, too, has a ruptured Achilles. Very sad moment for him and the Bucks this past postseason. But the Bucks waived Damian Lillard so they can free up some room to pluck big man Miles Turner from the Pacers. And they gave him 4 years, $107 million. You're thinking, okay, Giannis should be happy about this. Like, they just got better. They brought in Miles Turner. Or is this a move to maybe move Giannis somewhere? He appears with some cryptic posts on Instagram that he believes it's maybe the latter and is not exactly pleased in what has been a pretty, I would say, non-tenuous offseason between Giannis and the Bucks. Very patient, letting him cook. He doesn't like what they've served up so far.
What are the odds on him moving? Like,
I don't know.
What's the likelihood of this? Just cut to the chase. Is there any chance the Rockets are involved in anything with this?
See, I think what the Rockets did yesterday, or was it 2 days ago, with Clint Capella and Dorian Finney-Smith, those additions to the roster, I thought that effectively killed, like, any Giannis to Houston conversation. But I think what the Bucks did yesterday in apparently ticking Giannis off maybe took the percentage from 10%, you know, he leaves, to maybe 35%, in my opinion. I don't know. You're at least paying very much more attention to the situation in Milwaukee now than you were 48 hours ago, I would say.
Right. But you still don't think that there's any, you're skeptical that the Rockets would be involved with it at all.
Very skeptical that the Rockets would be involved. This
pleases me.
Don't get too big for your britches, Rockets. You know, you got Kevin Durant, you got your young core intact. Like, you've done a really great job. Maybe the best offseason in the entire association now. Like, let's pump the brakes a little bit on the Giannis, and I think they have. I don't think they're interested.
Yeah, for everything, I'd be a fraud if I said, I desperately want them to bring Giannis in now, because I've been advocating that, man, the way the Rockets have done this is the best blend of importing some impact play, but also developing your core and having long-term sustainability. Yes, I like this a lot. If all of a sudden you swapped out two of your young core for Giannis to bring in a superstar, and it feels like you're just trying to hodgepodge it together, like you're buying a team at IKEA, it doesn't feel as good to me.
Buying a team at IKEA. Yeah. we need to get to some audio, and we'll do it a little bit later on. Brian Windhorst had some secondhand reaction to probably how Pacer fan is feeling after what went down yesterday in moving, you know, allowing Miles Turner to go to the Bucks. We'll get to that a little bit later on, but we do have some Texan news, kind of. Joe Mixon, I'm guaranteeing you 100% of you forgot about the fact that this existed, but I did too, for that matter. Joe Mixon was involved in a lawsuit. It was settled, as reported yesterday. 2 years have passed since a suit was brought against Mixon after a teenager was shot on his property. Apparently, these kids are playing a game called Nerf Wars. Okay.
Yeah.
And reports yesterday said that it was settled, in fact, 2 weeks ago. And Mike Florio wrote,
So to be clear, there were teenagers that were in Mixon's yard or around his house that from the neighborhood playing Nerf. Like, basically, I don't. What do they call it? Nerf wars. They're just shooting each other with Nerf guns. Whatever that's called. Yeah.
To me, it sounds.
The Florio's article didn't explain what Nerf wars was, so I just assumed it's like what every kid does if you got a Nerf gun. Yeah, try to go around shooting other people with Nerf guns.
Somebody got really hurt on Joe Mixon's property, and he was embroiled in a lawsuit. And Mike Florio wrote that the report implied that to make this kind of go away, Mixon wrote a check. That he has settled the case, but Florio says it's possible, if not probable, Mixon's homeowner's insurance policy, not Mixon, made the payment. It just, in record, shows up as Joe wrote the check, make this thing go away.
But I think we're skating past the really interesting part of this story, which has intrigued me since. And I've read several articles on this, and they don't go into much detail, other than that it appears that somebody at Joe Mixon's house was inside Joe Mixon's house, and saw some teenagers out in the backyard or somewhere in the neighborhood shooting each other with Nerf guns. And the story from Mixon's people was, we thought those kids had real guns. I'm going to go out and shoot one of them. And the teenager who got shot, his parents disagree. They got to the point where they didn't feel comfortable living where they lived. So they sold their house for $2 million. So it's you can imagine.
Profited, I would imagine.
Joe lives in a nice neighborhood, and these people do. I need some kind of TV docudrama done about this. I could totally see me being the teenager in the yard playing games, maybe dressed up in camo or something. You know,
yeah.
What time of day was it? It was at nighttime. Then I'm inclined to think that okay. The person in Joe Mixon's household might have had reason to believe that those were actually ninjas out there with guns. I don't know where to fall on this. Other than Joe Mixon wasn't the shooter, but somebody shot an actual firearm at a kid who had a Nerf gun.
Right, right.
And he won, which is the important story.
Yeah, this is setting up to probably be like a 2020 short or something like that. You know, they'll spend about 10 minutes on this and explain this further.
I just want somebody to speak liberally about it. Yes.
Yeah. Chances of Joe Mixon being asked about his settled lawsuit in 2 months at training camp, slim to none, I would imagine.
It wasn't really because it didn't involve it wasn't him. It happened on his property.
Right, right.
So
the
homeowner's going to get sued.
Yeah.
That's one thing you learn about owning a house. They can't possibly blame me for that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're going to blame you. Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
They're going to sue you. Yep.
1,000%. Coming up next, we roll into the 7 o'clock hour. All the Rockets do is hit dingers. We'll talk a little basketball and revisit some Astro conversation as well in the 7 o'clock hour. Stay there at Sports Radio 610.